Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights and one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells. Streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. So opened the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, and so began the immortal relationship of T.S. Eliot with his reading public, with his first poem accepted for professional publication. Prufrock signaled not only the arrival of Eliot, but also the arrival of modernist poetry to the cultural conversation. Both the poem and Eliot have each given birth to multiple volumes of criticism and study, but beyond the academic discussion, it is a poem that I love coming back to over and over again. On our first date, while sitting in a quiet, dark restaurant in the French Quarter, almost like a scene from a movie, when it was time to leave, I turned to Jock and recited the first stanza of the poem, letting it unfold as we passed into certain half-deserted streets. It was a mild winter evening in that hot and humid city as we wandered about hotels and restaurants, and he stared at me baffled by the strange girl he had stumbled upon. And I marveled at the power of literature to grow and change in meaning over the years. Thinking of the first time I had heard that stanza, it was as the prologue to a play that I had worked on 8 years earlier. The play turned on concepts of masks and time, two motifs that Eliot comes back to repeatedly in the poem. The love song of J. Alfred Prufrock has been described in many ways, including as a stream of consciousness of an aging man grappling with his mortality and sexuality, or as a conversation between the poet and the reader, to name but two. But for me, the draw, and indeed the immortality of the poem, is not just how succinctly it fits together to create a piece that reveals something new time and time again to the reader, but the extraordinary beauty of the excerpts taken on their own that even as standalone pieces display a tremendous level of introspection. For example, "And I have known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase, and when I am formulated, sprawling on a pin, when I am pinned and wriggling on a wall, then how should I begin to spit out the butt ends of my days and ways, and how should I presume?" Thinking about the action of preparing a face to meet the faces we will meet and the questions we will fail to ask, I get lost in myself, lost to others while completely absorbed in the concepts that have commanded my full attention. And when wrenched back to communal communication, I babble, attempting to share these questions and images with others, because I was not gifted with the brevity or the power of wit that won Eliot the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1948. I wander about conversations, wearing people out, as I try desperately to connect these pressing needs to formulate answers and to find clarity, not only mentally, but in my relationships with others. Or, as Eliot put it so beautifully, "And would it have been worth it after all? Would it have been worthwhile after the sunsets and the dooryards and the sprinkled streets, after the novels and the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor, this and so much more? It is impossible to say just what I mean. But as if a magic lantern threw the nerves in a pattern on a screen, would it have been worthwhile if one, settling a pillow or throwing off a shawl and turning towards the window, should say, 'That is not it at all. That is not what I meant at all.'"